Ever find yourself wondering if a deal can somehow, fix itself after a shaky start? Or what happens when a court order just unexpectedly throws a wrench in your plans?
These are the kinds of fascinating complexities that crop up in commercial law, and they often hinge on how the legal system balances different obligations and actions.
Yeah, exactly. And in this deep dive, we're going to unpack a really intriguing scenario. It involves a carrier responsible for some cotton, a bill of lading that comes into question, and then a bank that suddenly steps in to seize the goods.
We've got the details laid out in a case brief, plus some background on similar carrier liability situations, which should help us get a clear picture.
And for you law students tuning in, this is a fantastic opportunity to get a handle on some core principles, things like carrier liability, the validity of shipping documents, bills of lading.
And the real-world impact of legal processes on contractual agreements.
Yeah, we're aiming to cut through the dense legal language and really deliver the essential insights you need. Consider this your express route to understanding some crucial concepts. So, what's our plan of attack today?
Okay, so we'll begin by laying out the specific facts of a pivotal case concerning carrier liability. From there, we'll dissect the central legal questions that the situation raises.
Right.
Then, we'll examine the court's rulings and, importantly, the reasoning that, underpin those decisions.
Okay.
And finally, we'll bridge the past and present to see how these established legal principles continue to shape commercial law today.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the core scenario. Picture this. A carrier finds themselves facing a lawsuit for failing to deliver a shipment. In this case, it was cotton.
Right.
Now, the people bringing the suit aren't the original shippers, but rather those who ended up with the bill of lading, the assignees.
Precisely. The plaintiffs essentially inherit the rights and, well, the potential claims associated with that original shipment agreement.
And the carrier's defense is quite interesting. They're essentially arguing, hold on, that bill of lading wasn't valid from the get-go because we didn't even have the cotton in our possession when we issued it.
Yeah, and that immediately raises a fundamental question. When exactly does a bill of lading, this key document in the shipping world, actually become legally binding? Is it the moment it's signed, or?
But here's where it gets really interesting. The cotton was eventually delivered to the carrier. You'd think that would sort of resolve the issue, right?
You'd think, but not quite. Just when things appear to be moving towards fulfillment of the shipment, a third party enters the stage.
Enter the Bank of Madison. They assert ownership over the cotton and use a legal mechanism called replevin to seize it directly from the carrier. Now, for our listeners who might be encountering this term, think of replevin as a legal fast track to getting back property you claim is yours, ordered by a court.
Exactly. It's a prejudgment remedy, basically designed to recover specific personal property. So the bank went to court, got an order allowing them to take physical possession of the cotton.
Okay, so the carrier is now under a court order to hand over the cotton to the bank. Seems like they're in a bit of a tough spot, right?
Definitely.
Well, here's a critical misstep. The carrier did not immediately inform the plaintiffs, the holders of the bill of lading, about this seizure.
And that's a pivotal point. Commercial law often places a high premium on timely communication, especially when events occur that could significantly impact the parties involved in a transaction,
Absolutely. The plaintiffs only discovered the bank's lawsuit and the seizure months later. And get this, they had to jump into the bank's legal battle themselves to try and assert their claim to the cotton.
Wow. So what began as a seemingly straightforward agreement for transporting goods quickly spiraled into a complex legal thicket. You've got questions about the legitimacy of the bill of lading, the authority of court orders, and the specific obligations of a carrier to the intended recipient.
Which brings us perfectly to the central legal questions at the heart of this whole situation. The first one seems fairly straightforward. Does a bill of lading absolutely require the goods to be in the carrier's physical possession at the exact moment of issuance to be considered legally valid?
Well, it might seem logical, right, that a document promising delivery would necessitate, the existence and control of the goods by the party making that promise.
Yeah.
However, contract law often considers the broader context and, crucially, the subsequent actions of the parties involved. It's not always just about that one moment in time.
Okay. And the second big question revolves around the impact of that court order. Can a carrier simply sidestep their delivery commitment by saying, hey, Sorry, a court told us to give the goods to someone else.
Yeah, that delves into the concept of legal excuses for failing to fulfill a contractual obligation. But as we'll explore, the court's answer to this comes with some very significant conditions, particularly concerning the carrier's conduct and, well, notifications.
Okay, so what were the court's answers to these crucial questions? And more importantly, why do those answers still hold weight in legal thinking today?
Right, so on the matter of the Bill of Lading's initial validity, the court adopted a, let's say, a nuanced stance.
Okay.
The key insight here is that commercial law sometimes prioritizes the practical realities of transactions over strict adherence to initial formalities. The court essentially said that while a bill of lading issued before the carrier has the goods isn't immediately binding,
right,
the subsequent delivery of those goods by the shipper can actually retroactively validate the contract.
So even if the initial paperwork precedes the physical goods, the later actions can effectively bring the agreement to life. That's a fascinating perspective on, like, the dynamic nature of contractual validity in these commercial contexts.
Exactly. The court reasoned that if the goods are eventually provided and accepted for shipment, according to the terms outlined in the bill, there's no inherent illegality that would prevent the contract from becoming valid. It's a, you know, a pragmatic approach that acknowledges the flow of commerce.
Makes sense. Now, what about the carrier's argument that the court order the Replevin by the Bank of Madison excused their failure to deliver to the plaintiffs?
Okay, so the court agreed that obeying a legitimate court order could indeed excuse the carrier's non-delivery. This is rooted in the legal principle known as vis major, which translates to a superior force.
Vis major.
Yeah, so the court is acknowledging that sometimes external forces, forces beyond a party's control, can impact their contractual duties. In this context, the authority of the law, expressed through a court order, is seen as potentially overriding the carrier's contractual obligations.
So it's a situation where the law essentially dictates a different course of action, overrides the contract, maybe?
Precisely. However, and this is a critical takeaway, the court made it absolutely clear that this legal process defense only holds up if the carrier fulfills a very specific and crucial responsibility.
And what is that responsibility? It sounds important.
Immediate notice. The court ruled that for the legal process to serve as a valid excuse for non-delivery, the carrier must provide immediate notification to the consignee, that is, the person or entity who is supposed to receive the goods about the seizure.
Wow, immediate.
Yeah, a critical takeaway is that in commercial law, silence in the face of legal challenges can be far more costly than, you know, compliance with the order itself.
So just following the court order isn't enough. They have an active duty to inform the other party promptly, like right away.
Exactly. The court emphasized that if the carrier delays this notification, as happened in this case where months went by without informing the plaintiffs, then they are strictly liable for the non-delivery.
Strictly liable.
Strictly liable. Essentially, this means the carrier is on the hook regardless of whether they intended to cause harm or were simply slow in their communication. The focus is solely on the fact that they didn't provide timely notice.
Strict liability, that's a significant consequence for what seems like just a lack of communication, right?
It is.
So let's delve a bit deeper into the why behind these rulings. Why did the court conclude that a bill of lading could be validated retroactively? What was the thinking there?
Well, the court's reasoning on retroactive validation appears to stem from a practical understanding of commercial transactions. They saw no fundamental harm or illegality in allowing the contract to become binding once the actual goods were provided for shipment as originally intended.
Okay.
It aligns with the commercial reality that sometimes the documentation process might slightly precede the physical handling of the goods, you know, as long as the underlying intention is eventually fulfilled.
And what about the balancing act between the obligation to obey a court order and the carrier's original promise to deliver? How did the court reconcile those competing demands?
Yeah, that's a great question. The court acknowledged the strong public policies supporting the obedience of legitimate court orders. You have to follow the law. However, they balanced this against the equally important commercial need for carriers to be reliable and to honor their commitments outlined in bills of lading. People rely on these documents.
Right.
The immediate notice requirement acts as that vital mechanism to ensure this balance. It allows the legal process to take its course, while still affording the consignee a fair opportunity to protect their interests in the goods.
It sounds like the court is placing a considerable burden of responsibility on the carrier in these situations, then.
Indeed. The ruling strongly suggests that carriers cannot simply remain passive when a third party asserts a claim and seizes the goods. They have a responsibility to actively safeguard the consignee's claim.
Okay.
The court even pointed to two specific actions a prudent carrier should consider taking in this situation.
And those are, what should they have done?
First, they should consider actively defending the consignee's right to the goods in court. Think of it as the carrier kind of standing up for their customer's interests.
Okay, like going to bat for them.
Exactly. Second, the court highlighted a legal tool known as interpleader.
Interpleader. Okay, for those of us not steeped in legal jargon, what exactly is that again?
So interpleader is a legal procedure. It allows a party holding property, in this case, the carrier holding the cotton, to essentially ask the court to determine the rightful owner when there are competing claims to that property.
Okay.
It removes the carrier from the middle of the ownership dispute and places the decision squarely before a judge. Let the court figure it out.
So instead of just handing over the goods and hoping for the best or getting sued later, the carrier has proactive options to ensure the goods reach the rightful party.
Precisely. And the court also emphasized a crucial point regarding potential collusion. Something to watch out for. They stated that if there is any evidence that the carrier secretly assisted the adverse party, in this case, the Bank of Madison, in seizing the goods, then the carrier will be held absolutely liable. No question.
So they can't be complicit.
Exactly. They cannot be complicit in undermining the consignee's legitimate claim.
That makes perfect sense. So for our law students who are tuning in, what are the key legal principles they should really be taking away from this deep dive? What are the bullet points?
Okay, several fundamental points. First, regarding bills of lading, recognize that these are much more than just simple receipts. They represent title to the goods, and they create significant contractual obligations for the carrier. And while the timing of when the goods are physically in possession can affect the initial binding nature of the bill, subsequent actions by the parties involved can have significant legal consequences, like we saw here with the retroactive validation.
Right. Okay. What else?
Secondly, the vis major doctrine, the concept that a superior force, like a lawful court order, can excuse the performance of a contract, is an important one to understand.
Okay.
However, as this case clearly illustrates, it often comes with crucial conditions. And in the context of carrier liability, that primary condition is the absolute necessity of providing immediate and comprehensive notice to the affected party.
That notice requirement, again, seems central.
Absolutely. The importance of prompt and clear communication in commercial law cannot be overstated. Failing to notify relevant parties in a timely manner about significant events can lead to substantial legal repercussions, as this case clearly demonstrates with the imposition of strict liability on the carrier.
And finally, it seems carriers have a more active role to play than just, you know, driving a truck or sailing a ship from point A to point B.
That's right. When faced with competing claims to the goods they are responsible for, carriers have a duty that extends to protecting the interests of the consignee.
So they can't just wash their hands of it.
No. This might involve actively defending against adverse claims in court or utilizing legal mechanisms like interpleader to have the courts resolve ownership disputes. Passivity in such situations can be legally detrimental, as we saw.
Okay, so this particular case dealt with, what, 19th century cotton? A long time ago. How relevant are these established legal principles in the vastly different landscape of today's commercial world, with global shipping and everything?
Oh, remarkably relevant. While the specific types of goods being shipped and the, you know, the logistical mechanisms involved have undoubtedly evolved dramatically.
For sure.
The fundamental legal principles established in cases like this continue to form the bedrock of modern commercial law.
Can you give us a concrete example of how these principles may be manifest today?
Certainly. The Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, which serves as a cornerstone of commercial law in the United States.
Right, the UCC.
Specifically, Section 7303 directly addresses how carriers should handle adverse claims to goods. This section reflects many of the crucial lessons learned from earlier cases, including the paramount importance of promptly notifying the consignee about any adverse claims and outlining the options available to the carrier when faced with such competing demands.
So it's codified now.
Exactly. So while we might now be dealing with digital bills of lading and incredibly intricate global supply chains, the core responsibilities of carriers and the legal ramifications of their actions, especially when confronted with legal processes, remain firmly anchored in these foundational principles.
So, to recap then, we've learned that while a bill of lading might have a somewhat uncertain beginning if the goods aren't immediately available, the subsequent delivery of those goods can indeed solidify the agreement, retroactively even.
Mm-hmm.
And while a court order might seem like a straightforward excuse for a carrier who cannot fulfill a delivery, they're absolutely obligated, no wiggle room to provide immediate notification to the intended recipient.
Right.
Silence in such situations is not a viable option and can lead to significant legal liability, strict liability even, regardless of fault.
Precisely. This case vividly illustrates the delicate equilibrium that exists between a carrier's duty to uphold its contractual obligations, its duty to obey legitimate legal processes, and its overarching responsibility to protect the legitimate interests of the consignee. That strict requirement for immediate notice acts as a critical safeguard. It ensures fairness, transparency, and accountability within commercial transactions.
Now, here's something to think about. In today's rapidly evolving world of e-commerce and increasingly complex global supply chains, how do these long-standing legal principles regarding notice and carrier responsibility continue to play out?
Yeah, that's the interesting question.
What are the modern-day equivalents of a replevin action, maybe in the digital age, or with goods stuck in complex logistical chains? And how do carriers ensure they are effectively meeting their obligations to promptly notify and diligently protect the interests of those who rely on their services?
It's a huge challenge.
This case, though old, offers a foundational understanding that is absolutely essential for exploring those very contemporary challenges, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It lays the groundwork for thinking through these issues, even as the technology and the context changes.